The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You're about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. I'm going to call this one the White Wealthy Privilege Edition. I cannot believe the breaking news broke this morning. Donald Trump gets a reprieve, gets a break from his bond. A lot of New York prisoners do not get breaks from their bond, but apparently a Hail Mary to the appellate court. And we're mostly going to talk about this in the second hour when Dom joins. But I want to point out Donald Trump, the bond he was supposed to make, $464 million. And the bond now, the appellate court says he must make $175 million. That's a $289 million reduction, more than a $250 million reduction in the amount of the bond, the money he's got to put up to appeal a verdict that's already found that he is a fraudster. And the appellate court gave him 10 more days to raise the money. Wish I could get that deal. I mean, if I'm late on a parking ticket, if I don't have a current credit card on the iPass, man, they're raising the stuff on me. I never get a break. I'm just saying. We will get there. Dom's going to join at 4 o'clock. You can always join. 844-967-2789. I got Rich here with me, lightly screening the calls. And the text line, you know, I read that directly. You can text. It goes right to my phone. But here is the local news. I don't know if you heard the news dump on Friday, but Mike Gallagher, he's out. Congressman, Republican, ran unopposed last time around. And he was something of a darling, a rising star for the Republican Party, headed up the big committee, the anti-China committee, that pushed through the TikTok ban, at least through the House recently. And the headline over at the Journal Sentinel, less than favorable. Suddenly they're turning on their own. 8th District Republicans criticized Mike Gallagher's early departure from Congress. Lawrence Andrea reporting, Dateline New London, Wisconsin Rep. Mike Gallagher's decision to leave Congress before the end of his term is drawing criticism from a key group, the Republicans wishing to replace him. Oh, they are a bunch of snowflakes, and they're out there whining already. Here's what they've got to say. The two Republicans running to fill Gallagher's open seat and a third teasing a bid pushed back this weekend on Gallagher's announcement that he will leave the Congress by April 19th instead of finishing out his term, a move that will leave the seat vacant until the next election. Roger Roth, he ran for lieutenant governor. Here's what he said. I'm disappointed. I think he should have finished out his term. Roth, who declared his candidacy in the 8th Congressional District hours after Gallagher said in February he wouldn't seek re-election, told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Here's an additional quote from Roger Roth. I think it's unfortunate because it leaves a vacancy at Congress at obviously what could be a critical time. Roth noting the slim one-vote majority Republicans hold with Gallagher's departure. Yeah, that's getting slim. My feeling is that it's good to have full representation for the district as soon as possible, said State Senator Andre Schock. No one's ever called him slim. He said this in a brief interview. So I would certainly be in favor of a special election. Well, that would favor you, wouldn't it, Andre? Or at least you think it would. Small turnout. You're the state senator. Roth, a assembly member. You've got a little more name cachet than he. I think you think you'd win a special. And Donald Trump aligned consultant Alex Bruesewitz, who is signaling a potential campaign announcement for April 8th, accused Gallagher of deliberately vacating the seat to hurt Republicans, a claim Gallagher's office rejected. The remarks from Republicans seeking to succeed the fourth term Green Bay Republican, I didn't really say that cohesively, I'm sorry, to succeed the fourth term Green Bay Republican reflect just a piece of the criticism Gallagher has received from the base in the party in the wake of his planned retirement. This is hell he's catching from the right, from the red team. Gallagher, who chairs the high-profile Select Committee on China, received intense scrutiny from his party's right flank in February after voting against impeaching Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. Oh, yeah, they kind of hate that. And he announced his retirement just days later. His decision Friday to depart before the end of his term has only intensified that ire on some on the right. They see the move as deliberate to keep Republicans' House majority slim. And under Wisconsin law, here's an interesting thing. Maybe you didn't know this, so listen close. Under Wisconsin law, a congressional seat vacated before April 2nd of the election year would trigger a special. But since Gallagher is planning to leave office April 19th, there would be no special election to replace him, and his seat would rather be filled in the next general election in November. I want you to know that this is deliberate, Bruesewitz said at a GOP dinner in New London Saturday night. This is the swamp and the rhino's way to backstab their constituents and the Republican voters one last time. He drew applause from the crowd, including Jacques, when he demanded Gallagher resign before April 2nd to trigger a special election. Good luck with that. Georgia Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene last week apparently said of Gallagher, he should be expelled if he refuses to leave immediately in order to allow his district to hold a special election. And Bruesewitz says he hopes Greene would move to expel Gallagher should he not resign earlier. Can you see that? Can you see Marjorie Taylor Greene leading another charge? She's already threatened on Friday. If you didn't hear, she's threatening to ouster the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. And now she's, what, going to throw out Mike Gallagher because he's not quitting soon enough. He's strategically blocking your ability, or at least the ability, to fill his seat through special election. And he's sticking it to you. And I suspect you're right. He absolutely is sticking it to Republicans. Let's say the quiet part out loud. Yes, Mike Gallagher is sticking it to Republicans. Why? I can't tell you exactly. I like it. I applaud it, sir. But I can't tell you why Mike Gallagher is sticking it to his own party. But, you know, this is clearly a Republican district. And I would say in a special election, a early quick election, the Republican would certainly have the benefit, right? Anyone with name recognition, let's say an Andre Jacques, maybe a Roger Roth, they would have the ability to create incumbency before the fall. Someone would have the honorary title, the elected title of congressman. And also the fundraising apparatus that comes with that title, congressman, even if it's late in the race. Now, they would have the RCCC, or whatever they call their organization, they would have the full apparatus trying to retain that seat, helping them, the new righty of the 8th, remain in power. So this kind of tilts the scales. And it does literally leave a vacant seat in Congress. Leaves an open seat. And I know that Gallagher says the staff's going to do all the work and they're going to do all the constituent services in his absence because he plans on being absent for about 6 months. You know, he's leaving, but he's setting up the House where they can't replace him for 6 months. I mean, what an interesting choice he's making. Now, and aide to three-toe Marjorie Taylor Greene did not respond to the Journal Sentinel's questions about her plans. Gallagher's office, meanwhile, labeled false the claims that his departure was a deliberate attempt to hurt Republicans. What else would you call it, Mike? Who will temporarily just have a one-seat majority after April 19th, further complicating their ability to pass their agenda. A spokesman for Gallagher told the Journal Sentinel that Gallagher's move was a family decision. What, you didn't want to take spring break off? My kid's off now. Spring break? Could have taken off early before April 2nd. Could have had spring break with family, Mike. Is it really about family? Anyways, here's what he says. A spokesman for Gallagher told the Journal Sentinel that Gallagher's move was a family decision and said House leadership had been aware of his plan for weeks and approved the timeline. They approved that timeline, did they? Was that before or after they knew that Marjorie Taylor Greene was trying to oust Speaker Mike Johnson? Now, Democrats have painted the departure of Gallagher largely seen as a pragmatic lawmaker as an example of the dysfunction within the Republican conference on Capitol Hill. As the party shifts to the right, oh, I'd say. Asked about Gallagher's early exit, Kristen Lierley, a peer OBGYN and Democrat considering a run for the seat, said it was a personal decision for him and his family. Yeah, like women's reproductive choices should be. Other Republicans have defended Gallagher as a thoughtful lawmaker who cared about his district. He was a hard worker. He paid attention to the district, said Brandon Scholz, a retired Republican strategist. My bad. All those things that you check off when you talk about how a member of Congress works either in D.C. or back in the district. Still, Gallagher's move has rankled some in the northeastern Wisconsin district. The chairman of the Waupaca and Oconee County Republican parties told the Journal Sentinel they were talking with other district chairs about sending a request to House Speaker Mike Johnson to expel Gallagher. They're trying to get their own congressman expelled earlier. And Trump-aligned Republicans like Brusewitz and Green continue to be particularly vocal in their criticisms. Brusewitz has not formally declared his candidacy in the 8th, but has strongly hinted at a run, calling northeastern Wisconsin MAGA country. Oh, it's MAGA country. Come back with us. We are the devil's advocates. That could change, though. I would say everything about this move smacks of Gallagher sticking it to the Republican Party. He must hate them.
The devil's advocates may not agree on much, but funny is funny.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. If Dom heard the Taylor Swift playing during the course of this show, we'd have a little bad blood. Dom will join soon, like at 4 o'clock. You can join right now, 844-967-2789. We'll definitely be talking about the buzzer beater Trump got this morning from the appellate court. They cut his bond to $175 million. Still seems like a lot, but he now claims he's going to post this newly reduced bond. You know, they reduced it by $250 million or more. I'd like to get that sweet deal. Unfortunately, I also should point out, before Dom gets here to chastise me, I was wrong about the Badgers this weekend. I thought they'd make a nice March Madness run. Yeah, Rich is looking at me like, what happened? What happened indeed? It was a bad game. James Madison just sort of handed the Badgers their ass. And the one impression I got, I had a few friends at the show messaging me in real time during the game or directly thereafter and said, what do you think happened? I think somebody gave AJ Storr bad advice. I don't know if he been talking to an agent or someone had told him, you know, go out and have a big NCAA tournament and you'll be a lottery pick. Because apparently this kid is considering whether to enter the NBA. And he certainly got exceptional skills. And this is a kid that plays for the Badgers, but he's only played here for 1 year. He's only a sophomore. And I don't know who gave him the bad advice. Seemingly it was to shoot without conscience and to, you know, charge the basket anytime the will moves you. And within the context of the Wisconsin offense, I mean, he had had a hell of a Big Ten tournament. But even then, it seemed like some of the three-point decisions he was making were stretches. And anyways, still seems like a young player with unlimited potential. And if he only developed his skills for like one more year, he would be a lottery pick. Legitimately, he'd be a multimillionaire for years and years and years. Or he can turn pro now. And anybody tell him about Johnny Davis? Remember Davis? I mean, great kid. Him and his twin brother came from lacrosse, played for the Badgers. One was just a little more exceptional than the other. And he became an NBA lottery pick, but he was still pretty damn young when he left UW. And he had exceptional jumps. And, you know, he definitely was a special player. But have you noticed how his NBA career is progressing? He's not exactly killing it in the NBA, not Johnny Davis. I looked it up today. This year, he's getting under 8 minutes a game, 2.4 points, and one rebound. It was almost like he should have developed a few more game skills before he took it to the next level. AJ, come on, man. Stay in school. Stay in school. That's all I got to say. One more thought. Connor Asesian. That young guy, he's moving on through the transfer portal. I mean, he certainly seemed like a good teammate this year. Had to be biting his tongue each and every game. He was the kid that often carried the boombox out for the Badger team. Helped, you know, sort of get him ready in the mood for the Badger games. But he is moving on to hopefully greener pastures. After a great freshman year, he didn't get any playing time this year. AJ Storr basically robbed all his playing time. It'd be unfortunate if they lose both those players. Anyways, more politics. Most of you tune in for the politics. I know you do. But, you know, I'm a homer. I'm a Badger fan. And it's a little disappointing to be out of the tournament. And then James Madison promptly got their asses handed to them by Duke University. I didn't even watch the game. I just saw the final. And I did have some fear that the Badgers were going to be a little outclassed by Duke. But, you know, it's so embarrassing when the team that beat you gets their asses handed to them. You know, you can't even put some hypothetical in there and like, well, you know, if we'd made that shot, then we'd have been the team beating Duke. Well, no, not this year. Back to the politics, as mentioned, Janet Protasiewicz, there was a decision. I don't know if most of you saw this, but she will not step aside in the Racine voting case. And why is this pertinent? Janet Protasiewicz has said that she would recuse in cases that directly benefited the Democratic Party or where the Democratic Party was a litigant, more accurately, I believe. And this case, you know, and of course, there are some that are going to encourage Protasiewicz to recuse in each and every case, anything that could be perceived through their partisan lens. Because, you know, the Democratic Party and the donors to the Democratic Party supported Protasiewicz. Now, the Republican Party also supported Dan Kelly, but the fact that he's a two-time loser and their support never earned him a spot on the court. You know, he did have the Wanker appointment, but it makes them bitter. It's like, oh, but she garnered help from a party, so she must recuse, even though our guys and girls have zero history of doing so. So here's the latest. Liberal, Urban Milwaukee Online Daily, my source. Liberal, did I say Urban Milwaukee or Liberal Milwaukee? Liberal Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz will not step aside from a case challenging the legality of early voting ban used in the city of Racine in 2022. In an order issued Thursday afternoon, Protasiewicz said she can act in an impartial manner in the case, rejecting arguments from the conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, or WILL, where there's a will, there's a way, by any means necessary. They are the law firm of the right folks. They insist that she must recuse herself because the Democratic National Committee is a party to the proceedings. A brief filed by Will states Protase was promised to stay out of cases brought by Democrats while campaigning for her Supreme Court seat. As a candidate for the court, Protase said she would not hear cases involving the Democratic Party of Wisconsin or the DPW. And while the state party isn't involved in the Racine voting van case, Will claims the DNC donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to the DPW, which donated to the justice. In a separate brief, the DNC argues is a distinct entity from the DPW, and such a recusal would create a plainly unconstitutional, chilling effect on donations, including judicial donations from the Republican Party. Oh yeah, unintended consequences. Why is this important? In January, Racine County Judge Eugene Gazakiewicz, I'm sure that's not right, ruled that while state election laws don't prohibit mobile voting sites like a van used in Racine, it doesn't allow them either. And the decision came after Racine County Republican Party Chair Kenneth Brown sued over the van, arguing it violates state law because it moves in a different location during early voting. He also alleged the van creates an opportunity to advantage one political party over another because the mix of voters in affirmative locations don't match the mix in the district where the city's clerk's office is located. They don't like that, you know, people accessing the voting process so much. Thus, for municipalities that follow the circuit court's same voting history theory, voters will have only one option to vote in person absentee at the clerk's office. Well, that's why there's a lawsuit. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. Big Monday.
The Devil's Advocates know how to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and we're all out of bubblegum.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, Big Monday edition. It's always bigger and better with your contribution, 844-967-2789. I checked the text line. Jeff from Sherwood informs me the Badgers playing in the NCAA tournament Friday. Hockey. Quinnipiac, the opponent. You know, if you find Jeff from Sherwood to be a reliable source, that means there's probably some Badger hockey going on this Friday on this fine radio network, Civic Media. That is, we'll confirm the dates and times because, you know, it is Jeff. Cap Times got a little op-ed piece or an opinion piece. Andrew Ball, Biden, Trump skepticism, open Wisconsin to a third party push. I dropped the verb. It's has. Question mark. Dateline Wauwatosa. Chris Noss isn't a donkey or an elephant. He's a porcupine. Republicans have pachyderms in their branding, while Democrats have been connected to donkeys since the cartoons from the 1870s. Libertarians like Noss wanted an animal that's armed, but only in self-defense. Enter the porcupine. His political affiliation made Noss's recent presence among a group of RFK Jr. supporters all the more remarkable. As Kenny backers noted, Kennedy backers noshed on potato skins at an Irish pub outside Milwaukee, Noss stood off to the side, sporting a porcupine-branded T-shirt as president of the Libertarian Party of Dane County. Now, Dom, my little buddy, used to call himself a libertarian. Always a bit of a porcupine, although he is more of a hugger than the average porcupine. He emceed their state convention in 2016. And if you'll remember, Hillary Clinton lost the state of Wisconsin by, you know, what, like 30,000 votes that year to Donald Trump, 2016. And everyone's quick to point out Jill Stein had more votes than the margin of error. 34,000 votes, I think, Jill Stein, after the recount, had in this state. But Gary Johnson had 131,000 votes and the state of Wisconsin. If there was a third party that turned that election, it was probably Gary Johnson. It was probably the Libertarians. But anyways, third party, does Wisconsin have an appetite? Kennedy is running for office as an independent candidate, not a Libertarian. And while there are elements of his platform that overlap with Noss's personal beliefs, many policy viewpoints underpinning Kennedy's campaign seem antithetical to Libertarian values, ranging from government-backed mortgage bonds to addressing housing shortages to a dramatic expansion of AmeriCorps. Noss said he's thinking about Kennedy's candidacy as part of a bigger picture. He's a serious candidate. Do I agree with all of his positions? No, most of them, I don't. But I'm here to make sure people like him do have a voice. Now, Kennedy's candidacy is not just for Libertarians, says Phil Anderson. I know Phil, the Libertarian candidate for the U.S. Senate in 2024. It is for Greens and Socialists and People Party's members. Everybody is shut out by the current system, so we need to work together. If we're all on the outside trying to break into the uniparty rather than trying to throw our stones separately, we need to join together. Well, Phil's out there running again as a third-party candidate. Five times in the last 100 years has a third-party candidate received more than 5% of the vote in Wisconsin. Five times more than 5%. The closest anyone came to carrying the state was independent candidate Ross Perot in 1992. But then, even then, he was well off the pace of Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush. And Kennedy will not be the only third-party candidate on the ballot in Wisconsin. Libertarians will have a candidate as well, and the Green Party has secured ballot access for their presidential candidate, likely Jill Stein again, whose campaign in Wisconsin drew national attention in 2016. A potential run for the bipartisan group No Labels waits in the wings. I hope they don't bother, but, you know, whatever. Some rich people spending their money. Do what you got to do, folks. Here's a quote. Again, I believe this is from Philip Anderson. Inevitably, as major candidates get put in place and money is spent behind them on the media, then people that were interested in voting independent or supporting third parties fall back in alliance with two parties eventually. But Kennedy's candidacy is a chance to break through all that. Really, Phil, you're going to align with Robert F. Kennedy Jr.? Now, the circumstances, according to this piece at the Cap Times, the circumstances in this election might also create an opening. Voters appear to be weary of a rematch between Democratic President Joe Biden and Donald Trump, who is now set to be the Republican challenger. Concerns range from the age of both candidates to the stockpile of criminal indictments against Trump to the growing number of liberals opposed to the Biden administration's handling of the ongoing war in Gaza. And typically, the fight for third party centers on relevance, getting on the ballot, building support, and trying to push voters to think beyond elephants and donkeys. But some fear in 2024 that the presence of these third party candidates could swing the election to one side or another. That fear is particularly high amongst Democrats, who have already signaled they plan to confront the candidacies of Stein and Kennedy head-on. Now, here is a quote. Jill Stein, I believe. You know, the Democrats have really thrown their base under the bus, Stein said in an interview with the Cap Times. That is what's spoiling their elections. There are candidates like myself that emerge to actually address these issues and provide an alternative, which the Democrats are terrified of. Will Kennedy's Wisconsin support last? Question mark as the subheadline here at the Cap Times. I'd like to hear from you as well. 844-967-2789. Would you consider a third party? Would you consider? Now, you've got a primary vote coming up here on April 2nd, and that is for the presidential. And obviously, you got Donald Trump. And you got Joe Biden. You probably still have the alternatives of the other qualifying candidates. Dean Phillips, Marianne Williamson. I bet they're still on the ballot, as are probably DeSantis and Haley and, you know, a few others of the yokels that ran for the Republican nomination this year. But of course, ultimately, it's going to be Trump and it's going to be Biden. And I've told you, folks, If you're going to protest, primaries are for protest votes. If you are strongly opposed to your party's nominee, go protest in the primaries. Mostly I'm talking to the D's here. I know there's not too many Trumpsters listening at this moment, but go protest in the presidential primary when you're not going to hurt your team's chances. And when I say your team, I mean like those Americans, those of us that favor democracy. I hope you're on this team, our team. Hopefully you're part of our team. I don't believe in the fascism. And I don't believe throwing out the democracy for the outcome of, you know, whatever the MAGA base want. So, third parties. Kennedy has long faced stiff criticism or renowned in some circles for his work with the Children's Health Defense and Anti-Vaccine Group. Kennedy personally has promoted false theories linking childhood vaccinations with autism and without basis told Louisiana lawmakers in 2021 that the COVID-19 vaccine was the deadliest vaccine ever made. If you're unaware, he's an anti-vaxxer. And while some of Kennedy's supporters say they're attracted by his anti-vaccine viewpoints, others say they're simply tired of the current political order and are looking for an independent voice. Amy Heffernan is a chiropractor in Waukesha. She has voted for both Democrats and Trump in the past, but she said she's become increasingly frustrated with both parties. January polling from Marquette University Law School shows Kennedy pulling in 16% of the vote in Wisconsin. Folks, that's a big number, 16%. Now, it's pretty early, but that's a damn big number. That is an outcome-affecting big number. Of all the presidential candidates, he's the only one who elicited a generally favorable opinion from voters who responded in the poll. I really feel like he speaks the truth about many issues, Heffernan said. Again, she is the, you know, let's call her a swing voter, considering voting for Kennedy. Now, Teddy McIntyre is one of the many voters who first got interested in Kennedy because of the candidate's family ties. John F. Kennedy was an uncle, and Robert F. Kennedy Sr. was his father. Now, McIntyre's own father, a loyal Democrat and a supporter of Robert Kennedy Sr. during his 1968 presidential bid, was one of those who crowded the train tracks to glimpse the transportation of the elder Kennedy's coffin to Arlington National Cemetery after his assassination. It feels like with him running, his father is still living, and in a way, my father is still living, McIntyre, copywriter from Pleasant Prairie, said. But as I learn more about Kennedy, and the more I hear him talk, the name is less and less important, and the importance of getting him on the ballot and elected was so vital. To get on the ballot for Wisconsin's November election, Kennedy's supporters must collect 2,000 signatures between July 1st and the state's August 6th partisan primary. 2,000 signatures, that's doable. I mean, you got farmers markets every weekend on the Capitol Square. That's how most do it. They go up there, they go press the flesh with the masses, they get some volunteers, you know, or some paids, or, you know, however the recall campaign for Robin Voss did it. You know, apparently they hired out-of-state felons and criminals and had them go out amongst the community and collect the petition signatures. But anyways, Kennedy would need 2,000 signatures between July 1st and August 6th of this year. And achieving that goal shouldn't be hard, says Barry Burden, a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. But Burden said he is skeptical that Kennedy will ultimately receive a share of the vote in Wisconsin that is anywhere near the 16% mark at which he's polling now. The power of the name might be attracting voters who will ultimately choose another candidate. It's relatively costless for someone in a survey to say, yeah, I'd be interested in that person. Maybe I would choose them. But the calculus usually changes as we get closer to election day. People who are affiliated with the parties often come home to their parties. People who dislike one of the major party candidates and really don't want to see that person elected will kind of go to the safer place and want to support the other major party candidate. I'm less clear. You know, if you're a never Trumper, I don't know how many never Trumpers I've heard say never Biden. Now, The third-party landscape, both in Wisconsin and nationally, is far from settled. Progressive activist Cornel West, I like him, but not as a presidential candidate this year, has launched a bid as an independent and has said he is intending to get on the ballot in all 50 states. The No Labels Party, a group that promotes capitalism and bipartisanship, has long flirted with mounting a ticket in 2024. The Wisconsin Elections Commission, meanwhile, certified that the Green Party will appear on the ballot in November, and this will inject a new wrinkle that the Biden campaign did not have to confront in Wisconsin in 2020, when the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled that Green Party candidate Howie Hawkins must stay off the ballot because of paperwork concerns. Burton said, again, this is the political scientist from UW, said the two-party system will continue to win out despite this menu of options and despite Biden and Trump's relative unpopularity. Debates, the campaign finance system, and other core aspects of the American political system rely on the supremacy of the Democratic and Republican parties, he noted. But there are fears among some voters that third-party candidates' presence on the ballot will conspire to chip away at either Biden or Trump and thus swing the race to the other candidate. This fear is most acute amongst Democrats, who have a long memory dating back to 2016 and Hillary Clinton's decisive defeat in Wisconsin. Stein, the Green Party candidate, received around 31,000 votes that year, roughly Trump's margin of victory in the state. And as Stein is likely the Green Party nominee in 24 as well, and is making an explicit appeal to younger voters, those frustrated with the Biden administration's support of Israel and inability to broker a ceasefire amid the ongoing conflict in Gaza. Yeah, it's going to be close. Coin flip, and then you throw in third-party candidates like Kennedy, maybe a Cornel West, a Jill Stein, Libertarian for good measure. It's going to be crazy, chaotic, just how we love it here. Because what choice do we have? We are in Battleground, Wisconsin. Come back, the Wisconsin Power Hour, the Devil's Advocates Monday edition. Dom joins at 4. You join next, 844-96-PARTY.
Grass-fed, locally raised, 100% organic. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Robert Kennedy Jr. is threatening to roll out his VP candidate. You know, show he's prepared to take higher office. And some of the names floated were guys like Aaron Rodgers and Jesse the Body Ventura, which I would suggest show he's less than a serious candidate. Something of a stunt. You know, you don't go to an NFL quarterback and say, you want to be my sidekick. What about his career in Green Bay or his short-lived career for the Jets would qualify Aaron Rodgers to be the VP? You know, let's say a meteor strikes and Robert Kennedy gets elected president. Is Aaron Rodgers prepared to replace him? So the fact that one would, you know, float these ideas, this seems very Sarah Palin-esque to me. You know, this is a candidacy in trouble. Of course, because there's no real there. No one's really voting for this guy. They might be voting against the current broken two-party system, as you might perceive it, as I might perceive it. But no one's voting for what? Anti-vaxxers? I'm against vaccines. I'm going to vote for Robert Kennedy Jr. because I'm against vaccines. You're not voting for him. You're voting for what? The personification of the bad, weird science that you like to believe in. So be careful what you wish for. I know some would encourage all the third party and all the civic participation, as would I, in a differing elective cycle. You know, I've been all down for third parties. I'm all down for more democracy, not less democracy. But, you know, if the alternative is Donald Trump, any vote other than Joe Biden, I would say sadly, is a vote for Donald Trump, or at least weakens the position of Joe Biden. And I think therefore would weaken the position of our country. I think you've got one answer. Vote for Biden. I didn't say you had to like it, but you got to do it. At least that's what I think. There is a question. There is a spring election coming up here in April. And a lot of my friends are like, oh man, the primaries are They're over. Why do we care? Why should we even care? Why should we get up and vote? Well, there are a couple of referendums on this ballot that I think you should get up off the couch and go vote against. Hopefully you're motivated to go vote against something, if nothing else. Go vote against Donald Trump and go vote against these couple of hyper-partisan Republican state legislative, I guess they're referendum questions. So the hyper-partisan Republican state legislature, according to the Cap Times, will for more than a decade maintain control of the state assembly and Senate solely based on their gerrymandered legislative district maps, have proven again and again that they have no respect for democracy. And unfortunately for them, Wisconsinites like to have a say in how we are governed. So the Republicans have come up with ways to fool voters into backing their anti-democratic agenda. One of their nastiest strategies involves amending state constitutions to thwart the will of the people. When their scheming is exposed, they're usually defeated. That's what happened in 2018 when GOP legislators conspired with former Governor Scott Walker, to the uninformed, to eliminate the office of the state treasurer. Walker was trying to consolidate power in his own hands as he mounted what would turn out to be an unsuccessful bid, a third bid. So he and his cronies proposed an amendment to do away with the position that had been filled by the voters since Wisconsin became a state. You remember that? The constitutional amendment to get rid of the treasurer's office. The electorate was not impressed by the power grab, and the amendment proposed was defeated by a 2-to-1 margin. There should be a lesson for legislators, but it wasn't. They're back at it this year with a pair of proposed constitutional amendments that have been placed on the April 2nd ballot. If passed, these amendments would make it harder to run free and fair elections in Wisconsin and harder for Wisconsinites to vote. As usual, the amendments are written in confusing language that seeks to obscure the threats they pose. The First Amendment proposed states, "Shall Section 7.1 of Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that private donations and grants may not be applied for except that expended or used in connection with the conduct of any primary election or referendum." Yes, that's very clear to me. What am I, a freaking lawyer? Here's the second one. "Shall Section 7.2 of Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that only election officials designated by law may perform tasks in the conduct of primaries, elections, and referendums?" As the Cap Times editorial board writes, the most important thing for voters to recognize in that both of these amendments are designed to complicate the current process for running elections. And that's a bad idea in and of itself, as Wisconsin has a long history of holding high turnout elections in an efficient and reliable manner. And former President Donald Trump and his allies have tried to cast aspersions on the system in Wisconsin as part of a broader effort to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential, which saw Trump lose the popular vote by 7 million ballots and lose the Electoral College by a solid 306 to 232 margin. The interesting thing about Trump's complaint is that they actually ended up confirming via recounts, investigation, and court rulings that there were few, if any, major problems with the way in which Wisconsin officials organize and administer elections. In other words, the current system works. That's an argument for voting no and no on these amendments, but it's not the only argument. The nonpartisan League of Women Voters of Wisconsin analyzed the proposed amendments and determined they both had serious flaws. With regard to the first proposal, they would bar the use of grants to help upgrade equipment, hire experienced poll workers, and keep polling places up and running. The League urges a no vote because elections need to be fully funded. This amendment reduces the option for municipal governments looking for outside sourcing of funds for elections without providing alternative resources. This change will shift the burden even further onto taxpayers. And the second one, this change will have a negative impact on voter experience. It could lead to long lines and wait times at polling places, consolidated polling places, longer waits for election night results, and more due to lack of funding. So, anyways, we trust the league's analysts, they conclude, and we hope, analysis, and we hope that voters will as well when they vote no and no and think hell no to block these threats to democracy in Wisconsin. So there's what to do with those referendums. Tell them to stick it where the you-know-what doesn't shine. Vote no, hell no on these referendums. Come back with us. It's a white, wealthy, privileged Monday edition. Dom is not exactly the personification thereof, but he does join next. Stick around, more Devils Advocates. The happy hour is right now.